Welcome to the Sportscast, August 7th, 2023. If you haven't yet, please subscribe in all our channels, YouTube, Twitch, Twitter, and Apple Podcast. You can also listen to us on your smart speaker. If you're listening on Apple Podcast, please leave a rating and a review. It will help us out tremendously. We're also on online radio. You can listen to it on the sportscast.net, where you can see the news and times of show. And follow us on X at the Sportscast One and on Instagram, the Sportscast One. And you can get the app, the Sportscast. U.S. women's team is out of the World Cup. Sweden eliminated them. And Lionel Messi can perform in Texas. Join us all the way up north. How Phillips, welcome back to the Sportscast.
Hey, Santi, greetings from the great north, where it's, you know, 75 and 80 degrees, just like Florida.
It is. I think we're going to hit 90 soon. So you're a little bit better than I am.
Oh, yeah.
Let's get started with the World Cup. The U.S., as you and I predicted it a week ago, a few days ago, we did not have much confidence in the U.S., and it came to be true. They were crashed out against Sweden. Scoreless games, which U.S. has been trending that for the past couple of games. They lose in penalties, and VAR gave the win to Sweden. Mm-hmm. How? What were your thoughts over yesterday's huge loss?
Well, I don't think it takes a genius last week to have recognized that this team was in real trouble. They just can't score goals, and they couldn't cope with technical sides that packed the midfield against them. They just played very direct, you know, which is a polite way to say they were playing kick and run soccer. And so it was not, you know, any kind of revelation that they were going to exit this tournament early. But they are the defending two-time champions. So yeah, that's a big story. The VAR thing was interesting. I didn't watch the game live. I watched it in its entirety, you know, when I woke up on Sunday morning, or I guess Monday morning. And it was, I watched the whole game, but I think I checked Twitter or something like that. So I realized that they had not advanced. I think I saw a tweet from Tony Meola saying, hey, this is hard luck, you know, and it was hard luck. They were very unfortunate not to win that game. But, you know, when you know the result, it changes the experience. And halfway through the shootout, I can't believe they lost the match. I said to myself out loud, how did they blow this match? They missed the frame three times in a row from the spot. And if any one of those players had made it, they would have won that shootout. So very strange denouement to a tournament that the U.S. women's national team would just as soon forget.
Yes, it was a penalty kick by Sweden Lena Hurtig in the seventh round of the shootout, mm-hmm. deflected off the hands of goalkeeper Alyssa Nair. But the ricochet was deemed to be cross the line when examined by goal line technology.
Right.
And I can show you that on the Fox Sports page here. It had to be done by computers. This is not, cannot be done by the naked eye.
Yeah.
And I don't have it with me a little bit down. No, it's up. So this was, and of course, you know, who missed the goal was, that the penalty was Ms. Megan Rapinoe. And
well, she was one of three. Rapinoe
one
missed
of three.
First.
Yeah,
she missed first, and I think she shot number four. Number five was Sophia Smith. She missed the goal, and then
Sophia Smith did go.
Yeah, and then the
Kelly
first,
O'Hara.
Yeah. So then, basically, stepping up to the spot, Rapinoe had a chance basically to put the game out of reach. Because Sweden had missed before them. She missed the goal over the, you know, skied it. And then Sweden missed again. And they had another chance to put them away and didn't do it. Then they go into the sudden death penalty kicks, you know, make and miss, and it's over. And who's the first, you know, kicker for the States? It's the keeper, Alyssa, you know, Nair. And she scored. So, and then she steps, you know, to the line, and we missed, you know, and then we missed the next one. And the U.S. keeper had to save to keep it going. And she made a pretty darn good save, but it spun back onto the line and over it. And, you know, I think people complaining about what a fine margin that is, and there it is. But, you know, it's a goal. And you can't be sort of swayed by the millimeters that led to this loss. They blew the shootout. They could not score a goal. They couldn't score a goal against Portugal. They scored, you know, basically one goal in three games after they beat Vietnam 3-0. So, you know, this team has a lot of issues, and we can get into what exactly they are. Some are structural, you know, the way that these teams are developed over time. And some of them are, you know, personnel based, and the team that was chosen and how Vlatko Androvic set them up. But this just wasn't in the cards. They aren't the fourth or fifth best team that I've seen at this tournament. So they were never going to win it.
Yes. Let's go and hop on what you said. What happened to this team? Was it structural, personality issues? Was it a transition, you know, back in 2014, we were transitioning of the old U.S. men's into the new, but what was the problem with this team? You know, they have won World Cups previously and Olympics, but what are your thoughts over why we went out early?
Well, the difference here is that this is not just any team that is getting older. This is the two-time defending World Cup champion. They've won four World Cups. It's the most dominant program in the game since the game began. And the game really began in 1991. They haven't held World Cups, Women's World Cups until then. So, but, you know, teams get old, and they obviously weren't able to filter in enough young players to make this team to carry it forward. And let's come back to that in a minute. But, you know, they didn't pick a team here that could score goals. Alex Morgan is a familiar name and has been a great striker over time, but she's not a number nine. And she was thrust into a role playing in the center of a three forward line where she had to play with her back to goal. And I didn't think she did it particularly well. Basically, they put a lot of faith in Lindsay Horan playing behind Morgan, and then Sophia Smith on the left and Rodman on the right. And they just did not produce goals in this tournament. Lindsay Horan scored from a set piece against Holland three games ago. That was the last goal they scored. Vietnam's a terrible team, and they scored a couple goals against them, but I really don't count that. And the irony is they actually played their best match against Sweden. I think we talked about this last week.
I agree.
Sweden plays very direct as well. So they weren't forced to play a technically sophisticated team like Holland or Portugal in this round. And they should have beaten Sweden. They outshot them. I think they had 11 attempts on goal. The goalkeeper for Musovic for Sweden, spectacular. They didn't really test her like they could have. They kept hitting stuff just a little too close to her. But give her credit. She was great. And, you know, didn't even have to make saves in the PK shootout, because we missed the goal three times out of seven. But you have definitely a generational change. But the way that the U.S. is now developing young players has been shown to be not particularly efficient or fruitful compared to the teams they're now competing against, which is every soccer mad country in Europe. So we can get into why that is. I think we've touched on a little bit in the past. But we're just not turning out technically sophisticated players in the number that we need to dominate the sport. And maybe that's good. Maybe it's good that we have to fight for World Cup championships. We haven't necessarily had to in the past. We had to beat a couple good teams. Now there's 10 good teams. And that's really the lesson of this World Cup is, yes, the U.S. dominance is over, but it's a much more interesting sport for the rest of the world, because now there's 7, 8, 9 teams that can win it. And that's much more fun than domination.
That's a lot of teams.
Yeah.
Than way before. I mean, you could say Sweden was definitely one of the top contenders years ago and still are, but now you're going to see the Frances, the Colombias, you know,
yes,
the Englands that are performing well. And like you were saying, we got to catch up. I mean, I might put this theory on how,
sure,
maybe we need to have our players play in Europe. That's just how things are.
I think that's definitely something to think about, but let's come back to that. Let me just say that, you know, when you have a developing sport, i.e. a sport that is growing worldwide, the problem is that there's three or four teams that win it over and over again. And we see this for remove gender. Look at ice hockey. I mean, there's only three or four teams that can win a world ice hockey championship. There's only three or four rugby teams that are really fit to win a world rugby championship. That's fine. You can appreciate that South Africa and New Zealand and Ireland now are superb rugby sides and programs. But if you want a World Cup to be successful, if you want a sport to grow and pervade the ether worldwide, you know, you need dominance is not what you want. You want parity. You want the idea that 9 or 10 teams can win. For a long time, the Women's World Cup was exactly like hockey and rugby. There was only three or four teams that really were capable of winning the tournament. That ends this year. Let's be fair. England just barely beat Nigeria on penalties.
I saw that. Yeah, that's a pretty impressive result.
And I thought that, honestly, Nigeria played a better game against England than Sweden did against us. So England was very fortunate to win. That's what happens in tournaments. But, you know, in a men's World Cup, we don't sit here and say, oh, this is a changing of the guard. Oh, this, that. I mean, you win games that you don't deserve and you lose games you don't deserve to lose. And that's what makes tournaments fascinating to watch. Now, let's go back in history a little bit. When Major League Soccer was formed, in 1996, Generation Zero, the subjects of my book, the first real generation of proper soccer players this country ever developed, they were playing in Europe too. And when MLS started, they came back and gave MLS their star power and their ability to, and they helped grow that league. And, you know, MLS was not very good for 10 years. And a lot of guys maybe sacrificed their careers to do it. And I think that's what's happened on the women's side. A lot of these players were playing in Europe 3 years ago. Now they're back playing in the National Women's Soccer League to try to make that league a success. And look, they've tried twice before to start a women's professional league and it didn't work. They're determined to make it work this time and I salute them for that commitment. But one of the things that is different is that the National Women's Soccer League here, the quality of play is not as high as it is in the European leagues. I think that's fair to say right now. And it's not as high in part because the Americans aren't in Europe. You know, the Americans are older and they've come back and tried to make this thing a go. But the other thing is that every club in Europe, Barcelona, Chelsea, Wolfsburg is a very successful German club. They have youth programs and youth academies where they're developing new players. We don't have that. I think maybe one or two NWSL franchises has an academy, and I'm sure it's brand new and it's not stocked up with players. We need to develop players in that way. We can't depend on the University of North Carolina to produce our national team. We need to do it more systematically, more professionally. And so that's one way that the European, you know, game on the women's side has caught and passed the United States, in my opinion. You know, whether they're, you know, the best European teams are all better than us right now. No, I think we can compete with them. We had a bad tournament. This team is, as you say, aging out a little bit and we didn't fill in the gaps and we couldn't score goals. But long-term, we need youth development that is attached to professional clubs with professional coaches. A lot of people are picking on the youth programs in this country. And that's, I think, a separate discussion, but we can have that too.
Yes, we'll definitely have an episode maybe in the future. Yeah. Same argument for the men's, even though men's, we have moved the needle, given credit, MLS have put academies, but youth development, you know, obviously the argument about pay for play, that's another episode as well.
Right.
It's still in the women's side as well. So we're seeing kind of a little bit of parallels and maybe, you know, the US Federation might have to move, you know, things around, or maybe MLS might, you know, give a hand to that.
Well,
there's a lot of different solutions.
Federations don't develop players. They can help. They can have a youth national team like the U15 and U17 to give them playing opportunities. But, you know, federations don't train up young players in a concerted, dedicated way. The only people that do that or should do that are academies attached to professional clubs where they have certified coaching credentials. And one of the things that's different about this country is that Look at Alyssa Thompson. She was as a forward for Angel City in NWSL. She's about 18 years old. She may be younger than that. She never played. She was never part of any academy. She was on elite soccer teams, you know, elite premier soccer teams that she paid, you know, her parents paid for her to have that exposure to that coaching. And she went straight to NWSL. Now, that's a fun story and good for her. She didn't really get a chance to play in this tournament. She's very young. But typically, a player who's 18 years old, she might be ready to play for a national team, but she more in a European country, she's already had 5 years of academy training by the time she's 18 years old. So she's playing and getting coached by actual professionals who know how to instill a young players with technical skill. And, you know, I keep beating this dead horse, but, you know, tying Holland in the second round of the second game of the group stage, there's no shame in that. Holland might just win this tournament. They're very good. They're very sophisticated technically. They schooled us in the midfield. But when you see a team like Portugal, who's never even played in a World Cup before, and they did the same thing to the U.S. team for 50 minutes out of 90, I was shocked by that. But that is the argument that I'm making and many others are making is, if Portugal can turn out technically sophisticated players, we should be able to do that. But they did it through academies attached to professional clubs. And we're not doing that yet. And until we do that, we're going to be behind the eight ball.
And I don't think we're there yet to have an MLS attached to a women's team. I don't know.
No. And I'm not saying that MLS should step in. I think what the NWSL needs to have academies. Is a legitimate league. I saw a great graphic just the other day. I shared it a couple times on social media. It is it was a listing of all the young men on the U15 national team, the national youth team for 15 year olds and under. Every single player was attached to an MLS sponsored academy. Every single one. That speaks volumes as to where the men's game has moved. The women's game has not moved this way for a reason, because they've won more World Cups than anyone else. They've won more gold medals than anyone else. They thought, I guess, over the long term, that they could continue to rely on U.S. colleges to turn out the players that they need. But U.S. colleges, UNC can't compete with Barcelona. You know, Anson Dorrance is a wonderful, wonderful coach and has turned out dozens of women's national team players. But the college system cannot compete with the professional academy system the way we've come to know it in Europe. And MLS has gone that route. And the men's game has gone that route completely. 15 years ago, I think I saw 20% of the U.S. men's national team players came through academies, either U.S.-based or European-based. Now it's like 87% of the players that are playing for the national team right now are products of academies. That is how world soccer works. And I think it's naive to think that the women's game is some exception to that. I mean, this is not a gender-based dynamic. It's you either get the coaching that you need at 13 and it turns you into a proper pro at 18, 19, 20, or you don't. Now, what is different is that in this country, we have this idea that if you want to play soccer seriously, your parents have to pay for it. They have to pay to be part of an elite program, an elite club, a premier club. But what people don't seem to grasp is when Barcelona or PSG or Lyon identify a 13 or 14 year old boy or girl, they pay for the academy training. They're investing in that player because they think that player is going to come back and be valuable as an asset to the club, either on the field or financially when they sell that player to another club. So that addresses the pay to play issue directly. It's the club's responsibility to pay for that training because they're the ones who are going to use that player on the field. We have a very different system here, and it's full of, you know, fly-by-night coaches who have a premier club, and they con a lot of parents into thinking that if you spend $4,000 a year with me, I'm going to turn your kid into a U.S. women's national team player or get yourself a Division I college scholarship. A lot of that is happy talk, and it's really the purview of professional clubs to train these players up, not the federation, not the collegiate system, and certainly not the youth development system as it exists today.
Yeah, a lot of question marks going on, and Howe has brought it up, pay for play issue. So we'll see what happens. You know, hopefully move the needle a bit towards if the club can sponsor the kid or, you know, give him a scholarship or a grant. Hey, we see future. We're investing in you. Come join our academy and go from there. All right. So let's look in the bracket for the Women's World Cup. As you see, USA loses against Sweden. Sweden will now play Japan. Japan beat Norway 3-1. Good team, as we talked about a week ago. Holland beat South Africa. Not going to play Spain. Spain beat Switzerland. Australia beat Denmark. Now they're going to be waiting for the winner between France and Morocco. England barely beat Nigeria. I didn't see the match. How did that was tighter? And tomorrow, my parents' country, Colombia versus Jamaica. How how do you see this bracket forming?
Well, I think Colombia will beat Jamaica, but goals are obviously very hard to come by in this round. And the Jamaican team, I don't think, has given up a goal in this tournament. So we may see PKs again there. But Colombia has some flair. And if they can get a goal, I think they'll win, because I'm not sure Jamaica can score a goal. I think the match for me that's most interesting is the pending Australia-France matchup in the quarters. But, of course, France has to beat Morocco. And, you know, that's a loaded cultural matchup right there. Morocco has colonial ties to France. And that's the first Muslim country to advance to the knockout rounds in a World Cup. So applause for Morocco. I don't know that they can hang with France. France seems to be getting a little better with each game, which is what you have to do in a tournament to win it. So France against Australia with their star player, Sam Kerr, in the quarters, huge matchup. And I sort of like whoever comes out of that game to make the final, just because I think Australia at home with a healthy Sam Kerr is, you know, might just be an irresistible force. England, you know, can't score, and you need to score goals. Even if they can beat the winner of Colombia, Jamaica, I'm not sure they can beat Australia at home or France anywhere.
That might go down to pens.
You never know. I mean, teams get a little jittery, a little tentative going forward in knockout rounds. They don't want to make a mistake and expose themselves. So we see a lot of penalty kicks. The game that, you know, the other side of the bracket is equally interesting. Spain and the Netherlands, those could be the two best teams in the tournament. They're definitely the best examples of what I was discussing before. These are just hugely skilled teams. Now, that doesn't always mean that you're going to win a tournament. I mean, the men's teams in Spain and the Netherlands, they've shown us that over and over again. But they play beautiful brand of soccer, and I would love to see them go to the final. But Japan is also very good. I think they're going to beat Sweden like a drum. And Japan will play probably the Netherlands in the other semifinal. So
you heard it here first.
Those are my predictions.
So you're saying from this side of the bracket, Spain versus Netherlands will go all the way to the end?
I think so. Japan's really good. And Japan did thump Spain 4-0 in the one meeting they had in the group stage. And I don't know how indicative that is of Japan's overall ability. They beat a not great Norway team 3-1 and didn't look nearly as impressive. You know, that we talked about this last week. The U.S. got a break drawing Sweden in the opening round. Sweden plays very direct. They're not like Spain and the Netherlands. They're more like Norway. They play a very direct brand of soccer. And we frankly play that brand better than anybody in the world. We still can say that. And we should have beaten Sweden. We were very unlucky not to win.
We were close, Hal. We had like 2-3 chances to close it out.
Oh, no. We should have won the game. We had 11. Well, I think we had 11 shots on goal. That goalie made 11 saves. I'm sure we had many more shots that didn't hit the frame. We should have scored at least one goal, and we wouldn't be having this discussion right now. But I think the U.S. would get trounced by Japan. And we've already seen them be outplayed by Holland, although they managed to tie in that game. It's, you know, these are razor thin margins at this level. And we can't just say, oh, the U.S. was destined to go out. I think if they won that game against Sweden, they're confident. They're throwing a lot of stuff back in the faces of their critics. They have the everyone's against us advantage, including, I wrote about this at genzero.halphillips.net. Really interesting to me the way the former U.S. women's national team players chimed in about the team's performance the last week. I mean, Carly Lloyd is working the media for Fox. It's her job to be critical. God, man, they really jumped on that team. And the way they talked about it was not just these kids have to play better. And of course, they did have to play better. But it was, you know, these people don't understand the tradition of our team. Like, they still think they're on the team. You know, Brandi Chastain was talking about how disappointed she was that this team didn't show the fight that our team normally shows. Brandi Chastain hasn't played for the women's national team program since 2004, but she's still talking like it's her team. I'm not sure that that's the way, you know, we're all Americans there. It's our team, but they have a sense of ownership about the women's national team that is unique. And, read the story that I posted there. It's very interesting to hear them talk.
You're right about that. I've been hearing a lot of the former women's kind of speaking loud about this team. Previously, I don't remember them talking too much about it. But yeah, a lot of question marks with this team. I would say, and we'll see what happens. Obviously, we got the Olympics 2 years from now, Hal, so mm-hmm. we could rebound as fast.
Yep.
And we'll see what happens. Want to give recognition, Megan Rapone and Julie Ertz retires. Mm-hmm. From the U.S. Team, they'll probably be playing for their club. Cheers to them, and just pass the baton, and we'll see. Hopefully, see more Trinity Rodman. I'm a huge fan. So,
well, you'll see them, but they've got to put them in a position to. They've got to align them with players that can play with their back to goal. I mean, Rodman and Smith ran off Morgan all tournament long, and to very little effect. We could not free those women up. We couldn't get them behind any of these defenses, and I'm not sure why that is. That's one of the reasons they couldn't score.
We'll see what happens the future and beyond. All right. So another match that day, if you got up at 5 in the morning to watch the U.S. women's game, you had to, and then waited for the Inter Miami. That was going to be around 10 o'clock at night. That's right. I did it. Hal did not do one of the two, but this match, it feels like every Messi match, Hal, is very anticipated.
Well,
but you got to watch it.
I've been watching the League's Cup. I invested in Apple TV.
Me too.
I guess for Messi and the League's Cup. I'm really interested in whenever MLS clubs play in the CONCACAF Champions League. Because I want to know how good, you know, Cincinnati, you know, FC Cincinnati really is. I mean, and I'm not going to find that out until they play Toluca. And so that's really what I think the League's Cup is about. And I'm loving it. I mean, there was I think it was Saturday night was one of the great sort of nights of games. There were four or five of them on. They were all great, tons of goals and drama. And it's a knockout stage. And, you know, I don't think the Mexican teams want to go out to an MLS team. I think they feel very strongly, and the MLS teams feel the same way. It's a chance to prove themselves. But the Messi games are off the charts. They're absolutely off the charts. And this game I watched with my daughter, who's visiting, and it would, you know, how can you not like a game that ends 4-4? They went and Dallas.
And with penalties.
Go ahead.
And with penalties.
Well, it got to penalties. They went straight to penalties in this tournament so that they don't just kill these players with too many minutes. But Ferreira scored a goal that was disallowed that would have given Dallas a lead. But then Messi scored right away. And all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, here we go again. Well, Dallas comes back and scores two goals. And what's his face? Velasco. He's an Argentinian lad. He's young. Never met Messi until he set foot on the field with him last night. And this kid had a great freaking game. I've seen him play. He's maybe their best skilled player. And he was tremendous up and down the field, scored a goal, assisted on another. And all of a sudden they're up 2-1. Then it's 3-1. Then it's 3-2. Then Dallas goes up 4-2. And you're like, wow, they have this game. They're going to win this game. But there were still 20 minutes left. And Messi scored on a free kick. There were two of the most magnificent own goals you will ever see in this match, one for each team. And when I say for each team, I don't know how quite to describe it, because both of them looked like the player who last touched it, the defender, was trying to score on his own goal. That's how elegant the own goals were. And then they went to penalties, and, you know, penalties, you know, anything can happen. It was a riotous game with a great atmosphere, with trumpets and drums. We were saying before we went on air, the game could have been in Honduras. If you just tuned in, you could tell it was swelteringly hot, and the music and the fan buzz. It was really a scene and a tremendous advertisement for club soccer in this country.
Exactly. And as Hal said, it was a neck to neck. I went to bed when it was 4-1. I thought it was over. I watch a lot of matches and 4-1 typically means it's over. No, when Messi's on the field, and I'm going to keep this in mind for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
Anything can happen. Messi could turn things around. And look at the FOTMA ratings. This is pretty interesting. Yeah. All the best ratings, the three, like the top three, were Messi, Busquets, and Alba. Can you believe that?
Yeah, but that's a human element, Santi. That's some person who is assigning these values. It's not like it's been crowdsourced. And you know what? If those three guys are on the field, they're going to get the best ratings no matter what they do. Although I will say that Martinez was not great in this game. And I thought Miller was fine, though, and actually kept them in the game. I think it was never 4-1. I think it was 4-2. I think it was 3-1, 3-2, and then 4-2. But the fourth goal for Dallas and I believe the third goal for Miami were both of these own goals.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Marfan and Taylor.
Yeah. And they were brutal own goals that, you know, you can't even believe that it happened. But anyway, I don't know what else to say that hasn't been said about Messi. He's dynamite.
He's the GOAT. Just say it.
You can't leave him alone. But, you know, one of the things that you really pay attention to when you're watching a game with him is, you know, he's being marked. You know, he's being marked in a very dedicated way in the middle third of the field. But he, you know, people are always saying, oh, he walks around a lot. Well, you know what? He walks around a lot so that when his teammates get forward into the offensive third, he's walking and he's lagging behind. And then he's darting in late to the top of the box, to the far post, and wherever he needs to be. And he gets the ball and does what he does with it. And at that point, whoever is marking him has lost him. So there's a method to the madness. You know, we've seen this before. I'm not making any prize points here, but it is, you know, when you're like, well, why aren't they marking him? Well, if you look at the game, they're marking him in the middle of the field. He's not getting it and going on runs from the middle of the field. Other people are doing that work, and credit to Miami as a unit for doing it. And then when they cut the ball back, Messi is arriving at the top of the box just in time because they know where he is and they know where he's going to be. And I feel bad for Dallas. They played a spirited, wonderful match.
They tried.
And they played hard. They scored some great goals. But they should have put this game away and couldn't do it. But in afterwards, as the Apple TV telecast was signing off, there was the coach, Nico Estevez, and you know, Spanish, talking to Messi, and it was like a fanboy talking to. He couldn't have been more sort of ingratiating, and you know, I mean, it's a big moment for him too. He was. You know, could have coached this game and really made a name, but I think he did anyway. His team played very well. Oh, the other thing is Velasco, Argentinian by birth, of course. And first time he's ever met Messi is, you know, on the field. Well, Messi came right over to him and offered his jersey to him.
Yeah,
so, you know, Messi knows what he's doing. Okay. He's pushing all the right emotional buttons now on behalf of his teammates. Remember, he dedicated the first win to a teammate who had like wrecked his knee. That was a beautiful thing. And then this gesture is just, you know, I mean, I think a lot of football players would have made the same gesture, but you know, the microscope is on Messi and he's pushing all the right buttons.
Well, he is, he's 3 games and a half in North America. He is the highest scoring, scorer, for Inter Miami, after 3.5 matches. And, the next match everyone's wondering, will be this Friday. Here in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and they'll be playing the winner of Houston and Charlotte,
right?
Which that game will be played tonight at 10 p.m. Howell is a huge late owl, so I'm sure he'll be watching it.
9:30, Santi, is not late.
Hey, I'm an early bird. I like getting up.
I guess you are.
But I'll do my best to watch Houston and Charlotte. You got to give chances to these other clubs as well. You know.
Well, look, it's really interesting. It's another MLS matchup. I mean, I think that the organizers of the League's Cup must have known that Messi was coming at some point this summer. It was an open secret. And I think they would be a little bit more excited about a matchup that pits Inter Miami against Toluca or Club America. Or something. It hasn't worked out that way. So Houston and Charlotte are not great MLS teams. They both managed to beat their Liga MX rivals to get into this position. So let's give them credit. But it was a completely different atmosphere in Dallas because it was an away match. And I think, I don't know what the ratings would be, but if Inter Miami can stay in this tournament and they can get a game between Monterrey and Inter Miami, I don't know how they measure eyeballs on Apple TV, but that will pull eyeballs in Mexico and, you know, the United States. It'll be an event.
And you can watch this matches anywhere in the world. You don't have to be in a regional area. You can watch it in Antarctica, in Africa, in Europe, anywhere. Apple TV, $6, and then plus the MLS package, $12.
Can I make one complaint?
Go for it.
And I have this problem with Peacock as well. They need to make it easier to watch highlights of these games. I don't have time to watch a full replay of five League Cup matches, that happened the night before. I gotta go to work. I gotta do podcasts with Santi. They need to, it's really hard. They have a wrap up show and that's fine, but why not have a key plays option or a highlights option when you call up a game? And the other thing, which is really more important, in my view, is when you are trying to catch up on a game that happened the night before or earlier in the evening, get the score off the game. Don't tell me who won. I am automatically less interested in watching those highlights or that replay if the score is attached. I don't understand how they can be so tone deaf about this aspect. Peacock does the same thing. Look, I want to watch the game. I would watch more MLS. And what's one of the reasons I did watch more MLS this last year? Because on YouTube TV, if I tape a game, I can watch the whole thing, and I do sometimes, but I can watch the highlights, the key plays, and it doesn't tell me who won. So the drama is preserved all the way through. I don't understand what they're thinking. It should not be a big fix or a big ask, for a technical giant like Apple. Get on it, please.
It could be just their first year.
I guarantee you there are thousands of talker freaks like myself who are screaming at their TV in the same way. It's really annoying.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with Apple. So far, podcast is good overall. I do like Taylor Twellman and Maru Mo. So we'll see what happens in the future. Mm-hmm. Big rumor that has some legs. How you might have read this already. Chelsea's interested in Tyler Adams as Moises Caicedo pursuit continues. He hasn't been rumored anywhere else, and Leeds is relegated in the championship. Right. Chelsea is not a stranger to American players. They had Pulisic in the past. But your thoughts, will this be a good fit for Adams?
Well, it's the same situation that Pulisic dealt with. Yes, it's great to go to Chelsea, even though I'm a Tottenham fan and I hate Chelsea. But it's a world-class side. And if you can get yourself into the starting lineup, you're going to play at the very highest levels and you're going to improve because of that. But it's not a guarantee that you're even going to play, for this team. And Pulisic didn't play. And that's why he's in Milan, because he needs to play. Young players need to play. Tyler Adams is a little different in that I think he's better at what he does relative to whoever might be on the Chelsea roster than Pulisic was relative to all the attacking options Chelsea had there. This guy is a world-class, number six. And if he gets that opportunity, I think he will show it. But it's going to take a big leap of faith Pochettino to play him there and hand those reins to him. But I love the player. And I think that he is one of the few that could go to Chelsea and actually get time. But it's a big chance, because if you don't play, you're wasting a year of your prime.
Yeah, I agree. But I really do think, like you said, exactly what I was thinking. I think he would be a better player with that position. And I think he has a good, he has greater odds for him to start at Chelsea versus a Pulisic, I think. Pretty much if he does go to Chelsea, I think he'll have a lot of starting games. So we'll see what happens. Obviously still rumored. Don't know if you watched this, how I watched it. I actually heard it on radio. Arsenal beating Man City for the Community Shield. It was 0-0 for most of the match, and then Man City scored towards the end, and then Arsenal tied it up at the end as well. went to PKs. Arsenal won the Community Shield. Did
you see it? I hate Arsenal, so I don't care on some level. And I don't know when this happened. I guess it was Saturday morning.
It was yesterday morning around 11 a.m.
Oh, well, I was, you know, catching up on Women's World Cup stuff, and it's an exhibition. It's nothing. It's not like I guess they call it the Super Cup in La Liga. You know, it's the cup winner against the league winner from the year before. And it's the last exhibition game. And I'm glad it's the last one, because I don't know about you, Santi. Do you care about watching Fulham against Brentford in Cincinnati with the B team playing, you know, 60% of the minutes?
Not really. I'm more concerned about what's his face, the American plays for Fulham. Anyways, no, I'm not concerned with that match. I'm more concerned about Premier League week one.
No, we're beyond that. And we have a World Cup going on in Australia and New Zealand, and we have a Leagues Cup going on in this country. I don't care about Community Shields. I don't care about exhibitions. 15 years ago, this was a big deal that European clubs came over here and played what was like the international series or the international championship series. And it's just a bunch of exhibitions, and it's great. There was, you know, that we were not spoiled like we are today, but right now I can watch, you know, once the season starts, I can watch any one of a dozen overseas leagues at the drop of a hat. And, you know, is it better to be live? Well, sure. But if it's live and they're playing for something real and the actual starting unit is playing, you know, for both teams, great. But that's not what happens. So I'm you know, more PKs too. I don't need to watch PK in an exhibition match. We need to put up with
there was no PKs extra time
in real matches.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, there we have it. A slew of weekend sports. Let's go into predictions before we leave. Colombia versus Jamaica tomorrow morning. Who do you have? No pressure.
Colombia.
Yeah, I believe in Colombia as well. And then France, Morocco, huge match as well. Who you got?
I like France. I think they're getting better and better.
Yep, another rematch of last year's World Cup. Well, there you have it, Women's World Cup. Hal Phillips, what is the best way to reach you online to talk to you about Harry Kane, Tottenham turning down Bayern Munich's offer?
Did they turn that down? Did that happen today?
It happened for the third time this summer.
Today,
yep.
Yeah, because I read a story about how they thought another one was coming. Well, he's certainly, he can certainly, that Harry Kane, he's got a real future. I think Tottenham should hold on to him, but you can check out, I'm at Mandarin Hal on Twitter, and I would go to gen0.halphillips.net. I posted a fun piece about all these women's national team players carping at their young colleagues, and just a real interesting dynamic. I just don't know that. And to be fair, I was going to say before, it may be that in countries that win World Cups, it's more common for the guys who won the World Cups to bitch and moan about how the kids today aren't doing what they need to do. That may be something that happens in countries where, you know, like Germany, where they've won multiple World Cups. But I don't think so. And it's certainly new to us, especially in a country like the United States that really doesn't play international sports in any other forum but soccer. So to have these women on podcast, you know, talking about how their team is not showing the intensity they need and they're letting us down. I don't know. It was an interesting story. I'd recommend that people go there and read it. gen0.halphillips.net.
There you go. Check it out. A lot going on in the world of football, world football. You could reach us at the World Cup. The sportscast.net on our website, or the Sportscast One on Twitter, on X, and also Instagram. We'll be following along in the Premier League this weekend. We'll probably have a preview show Friday, so we'll see what happens there. And the championship began this past weekend, so a lot of exciting things. My friend said Stoke City will be a dark horse, so we'll see if that happens.
Are they in the championship?
They're in the championship, yeah. I think they missed the promotion by a game or so. I don't remember.
You know their nickname?
I don't.
They are the Potters.
That's right. I remember.
Because Stoke has had a kiln, it used to one of the first industrialized nations. They built a very early iron bridge there that people in England still flock to on weekends to go visit. The very first iron bridge in that area of Telford, if I'm not mistaken.
Do you remember which Americans played in Stoke City?
Sure. Jeff Cameron played there. Yep. And I thought Jeff Cameron in his prime was about as good a center back as we had ever produced.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. I remember that. Anyways, I could talk with you all day about this stuff. Anyways, follow us along this week, college football preview, NFL coming up. Hal, I appreciate you coming on to the Sportscast.
Always fun, Santi. My pleasure.
This was your update.